Chodesh Tov world, and today's daf in the Sechet Chulin brought you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is daf Kuf Hei, and we got all the way up to Gufa Omar Rabbi Zeira. So yesterday we had quoted Rabbi Zeira as saying that the only way that you can do kinuach, and kinuach is a wiping out of your mouth through the act of eating something solid. Whereas hadacha, that is washing out your mouth, we ended up understanding that both Beit Hillel and both Beit Shammai, they both agree you need both kinuach and hadacha. The order doesn't make any difference. Which allowed us to understand kinuach better, according to Rabbi Zeira, because all he was trying to do was to tell us the kinuach element of the dual process of hanocha, of Adocha and Kinuach, both Alibid Beit Shammai and Alibid Beit Hillel, has to be done with bread. So let's take a look at that more closely today. Kufa Amar Rabbi Zeira, and Kinuach HaPeh Ela Bepat. You've got to use bread. You can't use other types of things. It won't be a really effective kind of rubbing against your teeth and getting everything out. And when I say bread, I'm only referring to wheat bread. But barley bread tends to crumble, and therefore it doesn't do the same job. And even chiti, when I said you have to use wheat bread, what I mean was you need to use wheat bread that has cooled down. It's not right out in the oven. Avo b'chamima, if it's still fresh out of the oven and it's warm, it ends up being sticky and it just squishes and it doesn't actually clean off your teeth, clean out your palate, and because of that, it's not going to help you do a actual kinuach hapeh. Furthermore, we need to know that when I say to you, use chiti that has cooled off, I'm not referring to chitim that is already hardened. I don't mean that it's already tough bread because it's ba'akusha. It's hanimili barakika. It's got to be soft. If it's already hardened, then it also tends to crumble instead of actually rubbing. L'maisa, we don't paskin, according to this. And in fact, hilchata, you can use anything at all, any type of food, unless it's like a sticky, pasty food. So you wouldn't be able to use flour. Let's say that just makes a paste. Can't use something like dates, which is really very sticky. And you cannot eat things that are soft, like cooked vegetables, so even the types of vegetables that are just sort of smushy. Those are not good. But anything else is a good way to clean out your mouth. We've talked until now about the need to break between cheese and meat. We didn't talk about the other way around. So we spoke about the fact that when it comes to chicken and cheese, so if you eat first cheese, then chicken, you can eat it by fikoren. You can just look at your hands in the daytime, make sure that they don't have any sticky pieces of chicken on them. And you don't even have to do all of the things that you normally would do between basar. But between basar, if you're going to be eating meat, then we didn't say whether you could just wash your hands or whatever. Is that enough? So between meat and cheese. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan said, you don't have to wait at all. Lo klum. What? I thought, didn't we just have before the ideas that were limited to if you eat cheese, what's the din about eating the meat? But Rav Chisda said that was only in that direction. If you first eat the meat, then you're not allowed to eat the gvina afterwards. If you eat the gvina first, like we've been talking until now, then we said you are allowed to eat. Of course, that would depend. As we said, if it's actual meat, then you need to do both the kinuach and the hadacha, and you need to wash your hands. And if it is going to be able to be mako with chicken, so then you can look and see whether there's anything on your hands. So something is wrong. Rabbi Yochanan couldn't have said you just do the same thing in the other direction. Hello, actually, that wasn't what Rav Asi had asked. Rav Asi had asked Rabbi Yochanan the other way around. He had asked him, Kama Yeshev Ben Gvina LeBasar, how long do you have to wait between cheese and meat? And Rabbi Yochanan had said, nothing. It's not a problem of a taste that remains there forever. And therefore, you can eat it without any kind of problem. So, okay, now there's all types of issues about this. As you know, I'm sure you've heard that there are those who learn bedavka, cheese that is sort of soft, but once the cheese is old, cheese is hard, and it's been it's been matured for over 6 months, so then it's considered to be the equivalent of having a taste like basar, and it sticks, and there are those who are makbid, and then there's the gra brings the zar, that anyway, within the same hour, one shouldn't be eating both. That's al pi kabbalah. And in fact, I mean, that's even true about the chicken, as the gra brings. Okay. As to whether you have to really be makbid about that a lot, the minhag is among the Ashkenazim to be makbid. Gabi tells me that among the chalabim, the minhag is definitely not to be makbid about that. Gufa. Amr of Chista, achal basar, asur lachol gvina. Once you eat meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese right after that meat. But if you ate gvina, then you are allowed to eat the meat right after, meaning with whatever hachanas in terms of hadacha, and in terms of the kinuach, and in terms of washing your hands. That's taken for granted. Here we're only talking about the time. How much time? Kama yishay. And we're saying in terms of time, it's not a time issue. Omer le Rav Acha bar Yosef to Rav Chista, what's the din of basar shebein hashinai? Mahu. So let's say you ate a steak, you've got a lot of little pieces of meat that are stuck between your teeth. Is that considered to be meat? And therefore, as long as that was between your teeth, it's still considered to be eating meat until you take it out? Is that still have a din of meat? Does it lose its taste after a while? Kari alei, Sir Rav Chista said, it's a pasuk. It says beferish in the pasuk, benogea the slav, that says habasar odenu ben shinehem. That seems to be the whole point over there, that you would actually be called ben shinehem as meat. The meat is still there. So obviously if it's there, then you're considering it to still be eating the meat. That's how Rashi learned. The Pashtus would be that if that's the case, then you wouldn't even start counting the time that you need to wait, which we haven't gotten to yet. But that would mean that as long as the meat is between your teeth, then you would have to actually be considered to still be eating meat. And then after you take the meat out, then we can start worrying about how much time you're supposed to be waiting between one of the others. That is a tremendous chumrah to say that. And here, most Mefarshim learn that the question over here is it just the same as gvina? That's the problem. That's how the Gra understands it. So that the idea of finding meat between your teeth, that you have to move it, so as the Gra puts it, nehi deino meshech tam, it's lo gara mi gvina, de gamken eino moshech tam. So this is a very important I see Gabi is not here, apparently. But in your list of these inyanim, I suppose we should include basar b'chalav, and that is called meshech tam. Meshech tam means that there are certain things where the taste takes a long time to dissipate. Meat has a very heavy, oily taste, and it remains in your mouth for a long time. And now the question is, the way Rashi seems to be learning, it's mashma, that it's actually considered to be full-scale meat. But the Gra explains that, no, actually, it's not moshech tam if it's ben hashinai, but it's considered to be meat in the same way that cheese is considered to be cheese. So if you take out the cheese, we said you still have to wash your mouth, and then you can eat. The same thing is true over here. It doesn't start whatever the time is, let's say the 6 hours, we'll see where we get that from. It doesn't start at the moment that you take the meat out from between your teeth. But you need to remove the meat between the teeth in order to be able to eat it, just like you would remove the dvina by wiping out your mouth.
The clock already started 10 minutes before, or whenever you finish.
The clock starts, according to the way we paskin, at the end of the actual eating. Omer Mar Ukva, I got to tell you guys, I'm not such a good boy. If you compare me to my father, it's like comparing vinegar to fine wine. What can I tell you? Ana lahamilta chala bar chamra legabe abba. Don't compare me to my father. My father was like fine wine. I'm like vinegar. Because I could tell you that when my father, he would eat meat on whatever time it is today, he would lo aviyochel gvina ad lemachar b'hayshaita. He wouldn't eat the milchiks until the same time 24 hours later. So he was very, very makbit that there shouldn't be any type of taste whatsoever. Masha'in came, I, bahas udata udalo achyon. I won't eat meat in the same su'uda, but by the next su'uda, I eat it because I stick to the halacha. My father was a big chassid and he went lifnei mishurat hadin. But as far as the ikar halacha is concerned, you only have to be in a different meal. And it doesn't matter, the pashtas, how long that is. Because as long as it's not the exact same meal and you benched and you started eating again, except for the fact that the Zohar says not to eat the two in the same hour. Okay, so that is the Ikar Din. We don't eat it in the same hour, but this is where the minute comes in Holland to wait only 1 hour, because that really is the Ikar way in which Tosfos understands the whole halacha over here. You don't eat it in the same meal. That's all that it means. The moment that you bench, you can eat it. Except that al pi kapola, we are not supposed to eat it by Issur Shah. So that's where the minute comes from, that I'm sure you've heard, of waiting 1 hour, and then you're able to eat the gvina after the basu. And mi'ikar hadin, that really is fine. Now the question over here is those who understand that it means standard meals. What was the standard period between meals? So there you get the difference between the minhagim of some of the Yekesha Jews. They wait 3 hours, and some wait 5 hours, some wait 6 hours, 5.5 hours, because as the Rambam paskins, approximately, it's like approximately 6 hours between meals, but that would mean that whatever would be the standard between meals, and of course that would vary in how long the day was, right? I mean, if you have a very short day, then since they only had a su'udah shachris and a su'udah while it was still light, they didn't eat in the dark, so there wasn't that much time between the meals. So that's how we come out with all of these various minhagim, because there is no clear-cut halacha about this, and it's really dependent on how you understand the words su'udata achrita. The simplest way, of course, of understanding it is the way Tosfos understands it, that it just means as long as it's not within the same actual meal. Omar Shmuel, me too. I also do not compare to my father in a particular thing. Ana lahamilta chala bar chamra legabe ab. I could tell you, my father was very, very careful. This is amazing because the juxtaposition of these two inyanim is so beautiful. Like this, people think about it in terms of, being very machmer, how machmer you're going to be, make sure that you don't, chas v'shalom, come to anything that is similar to basar b'chalav. So Shmuel says exactly the same lashon, and it has to do with how careful to be about your business. So compare my father to me. My father was makpin that he, every single day, two times a day, he would go around all of his property to make sure that everything was in good shape. He wouldn't leave the office for nothing and let other people mess things up for him. And he would come in two times a day to make sure that everything was okay. And me, I'm an old good Nick, and I only go around all my property once a day. So that makes me like vinegar compared to fine wine. Fine wine cares. Vinegar, no. And I only go around my property once a day to make sure everything's okay. And actually, this was Shmuel's shita, not the cool out, but the chiev to at least once a day make sure you go around all your property. This is something that Shmuel always used to say. Man desire nirse koyuma, mashka chastira. A person who makes a tour of everything he owns once a day, he's going to end up finding some coins, meaning he's always going to save himself money. So Abaye, he used to go around all of his property every single day. And one day, he finds his oris, his sharecropper, the Darik Bitchadofi. He's carrying this really beautiful bundle of wood on his back, which he had obviously stolen directly from Abayas. And he says to him, excuse me, but Hani Lahecha, where exactly do you think you're taking these things? Oh, I was just taking them into Rebbe's house, you know. Wanted to make sure there was lots of fire for the fireplace. Aha, says Abaye, it's too late, buddy. Kvar kadmucha rabbanan. The Talmidei Chachomim were here first, and they made certain that you don't get away with that kind of stuff. And another maisa like this, Rav Asi also used to go around every day. And I don't know, he never saw any purpose in where he's going around. He's walking around every single day. Months go by. I don't know, you know, I trust Shmuel, but I ain't never found a single quarter even. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't see how you get rich from walking around. Anyway, one day he's walking around and there's this gigantic stream of water bursting out of a pipe. It's not really a pipe. It's the open. It's, you know, of the Bitka Bar. Right? So there's a break in a canal. In our terms, it would be a busted water pipe gushing all over the place. And immediately, Shakle Leglime, he took off his coat, he rolls it up, he puts it into the hole as a temporary measure, and he starts yelling for help. People come, and they help him to actually dam up the whole thing, which actually saved his entire crop. And he said, whew, Omar Ashkachinta Lekule Yistiri Demar Shmuel. Just, I got them all at one time. He never said you're going to find one every day. But he said, so average it out. Boy, oh boy, I found money every single day. Okay, so now getting back to the dinim of Netilat Yadayim. So we started talking about a new Netilat Yadayim here. And this was a Netilat Yadayim that wasn't in order to be able to eat pat. It wasn't Mayim Acharonim. It was Mayim that came between the Gvina and the Basar, the Oaf that we were talking about. So it was a different type of Netilat Yadayim. And the question is, I mean, we know that we've got a lot of different inyanim. We've got Mayim that we use for Netilat Yadayim for pat. That's called Mayim Rishonim. And we have Mayim that we do before Birkat HaMazon, and that's called Mayim Acharonim. And then the minhag was in civilized places, as it still is in the few remaining civilized places, that you also have an opportunity to wash your hands or dip them, and they give you a little thing to wash your fingers off. I don't know if Gavi deserves his boost this morning. We're trying to get him to write down things, and he's not there. I'm going to have to send some agents up to Choni Amagel and grab him next time he comes. Please add to your list today's, when you review the Gemara, today's Gemara. Okay, now we'll give you your boost. So, these different Mayim have different dinim. And let's go through some of the simple ones. Omer Avidi Baravin, Omer of Yitzhak Barashian, Mayim Rishonim Mitzvah. But Mayim Aharonim, Chovah. So there's a big difference. The first, what you do, before you eat bread and so on. That's called Mayim HaRishonim. That is a mitzvah. But the Mayim HaAchronim, oh man, that is absolutely a chiyuv. A chiyuv is a word when it's used in conjunction with mitzvah as talking about something that is more critical. And as it turns out, it's more critical because it will affect your health. So, question is, how could Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashiyan say that the Mayim HaRishonim are just a mitzvah, like they're not really as critical? Meisvei, Mayim Rishonim VeAchronim Chova, and only the Emtzayim, when you're washing your hands between, like we spoke about in civilized places, so you're washing your hands between various courses, and we'll talk about that a little bit later today. That is a nice thing to do, but it's not critical, and it's not a mitzvah. But here it says that both Rishonim and Achronim are Chova. So how is it that Rav Ili Baravin quotes Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashiyan as saying that, no, actually they're not a Chova, they're only a mitzvah? Well, says the Gemara, I mean, there's no real definition of mitzvah and chova, is there? They're just relative words. So if you're talking about the rishus, you're saying that the course, the water between courses for civilized people, that is a rishus. So if you're comparing something relative to a rishus, then either mitzvah or chova is called chova. But if you're comparing mitzvah, rishus, and chova, so then you become a little bit more careful and you use your adjectives more precisely. So we have relative to rishus, you get chova. Relative, because there's no middle stage, but if you've got relative to a real chova and a rishus, then you want to talk about the difference of mitzvah, which is not as much a chiyuv as the absolute chova is. Gufa. Let's take a look at what we just said. So we brought a braita. The braita said, Mayim Rishonim, the Achronim Chova, Emtzayim Arishus. And there's a lot of difference in the halachas of how you do it. The Mayim Rishonim, you can actually pour it over your hands. But where do you pour it? Doesn't matter. You could pour it into a sink. You could pour it over the ground. Depends where you are, whatever is convenient. But the Mayim HaAchronim, you cannot pour over the ground. You have to pour it into some container. And some say, Einot Mim Al Gabei Karka, you can't pour it over the ground. They didn't say you can only pour it into a container. Is there a difference between those two? There is indeed. May Binayu, Ik Binayu Kinsa. So the question is, the way we said it originally, you have to pour it into a kli. So according to that, even if you have some paper towels or, in those days, wood chips to absorb some of the water when it pours, that's not good enough. It has to be poured into a kli. You wouldn't even allow it to be on top of the paper towel or the chips. Ashenkin, the way we said it in the other girsa, is you're not allowed to pour it over the karka, but that would mean if you put something there, wood chips, you would be allowed to. And that would be the nafkamina between the two understandings of it. So we're going to see what this is nogea, what the big problem is pouring mayim acharonim. Mayim rishonim, when it comes to washing before bread, you could use either cold water or hot water, doesn't make any difference. But the acharonim, you cannot use hot water. You must use cold water. Mipnei shechamim mifa'afein et hayadayim. You may think you're doing a better job of washing your hands off because you're using hot water. But the truth is that what the hot water does is it actually melts the fats that are on your hands and it allows the skin to absorb more and doesn't take it off. So it's ino ma'avein ma'avirin et hazuama. It doesn't take off the filth from your hands, from your fingers. And that's the point over here, as we'll see. Mayim Rishonim, notlim bein bechamin bein bitzonein. You said you can use hot water or cold water. Does that mean of any temperature? Om Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Om Rabbi Yanai. No, it does not. Lo shana lo shein ayat so let it behen. You cannot use water that is too hot. If it's the kind of hot. Now here, generally speaking, And this is Gavi still here? He's hiding again. This is another one of the expressions, Yad Soledet Bahem. And Yad Soledet Bahem is something that we've spoken about in the Ofer Shabbos, the question of what's considered to be bishul. Here's a completely different issue. And because of that, Rashi actually has two different definitions of Yad Soledet Bahem, depending on what sugya we're talking about. So over here, Rashi learns that Yad Soledet Bahem means literally that your hands would actually be nichveit, your hands would be burned by these, whereas elsewhere, we understand the word soledet simply means, oh, you pull it away, but it does not mean that it actually would scald your hands. So there are two different ways. Here, Rashi learns Yad Soledet. L'maisa, we paskin not like that, and we are machmer on Yad Soledet, which is actually what we call Yad Soledet, which means that it's just really hard to hold your fingers in, but it doesn't actually cause any burning, any blistering, won't scald you. So it's a machlokas, and we actually don't understand the sugya like Rashi, and even the Yad Soledet Bahem, which would mean you actually recoil from it, so then you're not going to really allow the water to get over you, and therefore ein noknim bahem. That's not good for your mayim rishonim. But some learned that what Rabbi Yonai made the difference between Yad Soledet Bahem and not was going on the last part of the brachta that we had said, acharonim, you have to use cold water, not hot water. And it was there that Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef quoted Rabbi Yonai as saying, when we say you cannot use hot water for mayim acharonim, we don't mean it can't be a very nice warm temperature. We mean it can't be Yad Soledet Bahem, but if not that hot, that Yad Soledet Bahem, then it would be perfectly okay to use it with the mayim acharonim. According to that, Michlal, that if you understand that the din was only said on the mayim acharonim, then that would mean that the mayim rishonim, af apisha Yad Soledet Bahem, would be mutter. So that would mean a tremendous kula, according to that, and that is actually the way that we pasken. And the only part is that there's a machlokes achronim between the Shulchan Aruch and the Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch about whether this means Yad Soledet Bahem like Rashi or Yad Soledet Bahem the way that we understand it all over Shas. So, okay, basically, we're machmer in terms of the latest halacha, the Mishnah Berurah's Pesach. So that would mean afal pisha yad soledet bahem mutter doesn't mean literally, like Rashi says here, that it would get scalded. It means it's hard for you to hold your hand under there, but you can manage it. So it doesn't actually covet, it's not burning you. Then we read that emsa'in rishut. So what do we mean exactly when we say the emsa'in? Well, I mean, we just learned that there is a chiyuv of emtsayim if it's between the gvina and the basar. So that you have to wash your hands off. And the only time you get away without is if it's daytime and it was chicken and not meat. But how can we make a general statement that the tafshil between two tafshilim, that it's not a chiyav and it's just a reshus? And therefore, Amar Reb Nachman, let's understand what we mean. When we say emtsayim reshus, what we mean is lo shonu ela ben tafshil le tafshil. We're talking about two types. You know, you can have a fish casserole and then you're going to have a pasta casserole. Both of them are milfix, let's say. Or you're going to have two different types of meat casseroles. So over there, it's simply a civilized thing to do, to have clean hands when your plate is being replaced and you're starting to eat the next course, right? But certainly, if you're talking about ben tafshil legvina, if you're dealing with between different milchiks or fleishiks, then, as we said before, it's an absolute chiyuv. Now, question over here is that it's not so simple. Because when we talk about the concept of a tafshil, that may often mean that it doesn't have the actual pieces of meat in it. It's just a meaty tafshil, right? So not just that it was cooked in a fleshy pot, but that it has gravy in it or something, but it doesn't have any actual pieces of meat. So that's the question. And the Rabbi Natan actually understands that this Gemara is making a difference between eating meat itself and the idea of waiting between the two, or eating something that has the taste of meat in it, but there's no pieces of meat. Because since what we said before, it was a reference to meat itself, and that's when we're talking about what if the meat is stuck between your teeth, and we had the idea that Gavi was going to write down when he reviews, which is called meshech tam, that it continues to put taste into your mouth. But when it comes to something that has only meaty taste, says Rabbi Natan, and it's essentially, it was parav, it's just that it had meat that it absorbed the taste of. So Rabbi Natan, tain is it, that's what we're talking about over here. A tafshil and a tafshil, it doesn't matter what direction it's in, meat to milk or milk to meat. And therefore, that's the whole point of the Chiddush over here in which Reb Nachman is saying. And because of that, we have once again another Svardik Ashkenazic Machlokas, because the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins like the Rabbeinu Tam. And if you have something that doesn't have actual pieces of meat in it, then you don't have to wait your 6 hours. The din of 6 hours is only on actual meat. And as usual, the Ashkenazim go l'chumra, and they're makbid to be machmir, actually, even if it's a casserole of some kind that doesn't have the actual pieces in it. So we are makbid. Okay. Omer v'yere b'rei d'rebe v'yere. Mipnei ma'am ru mayim acharonim chuva. Like what this whole critical issue of mayim acharonim to say that it's more chuva than mayim rishonim, like what's the whole point? I thought it was just to stay clean. Why did they say that it is so important? Well, there's some really kind of vicious salt, and that's called melach sedomit, which actually is still mined today in Sedom. And as the Rambam says, is salt like this all over? We just call it melach sedomit, but there's other salts that are like it that are not just sodium chloride, and they have all kinds of other stuff in it, which of course we know, wow, there's a lot of very useful chemicals that come out of the Yam HaMelach, and they're just rolling out of there, truck after truck. It's something special to see. So you can
millions of dollars a day.
Really? Millions of dollars. Wow. Beautiful.
On Yom Kippur, they let water run through. They don't run the machinery in Yom Kippur.
Okay. Baruch Hashem. So you can get iodine, obviously, and they get bromide, they get sulfur, and tons of magnesium, potassium, besides all of the regular sodium. And some of that stuff in your eyes is not very good for your eyes. And because of that, since it's misameyata inayim, shemelach sedomit yesh misameyata inayim, there might be some of that melach sedomit in the salt that you used, in your salt shaker. So because of that, to make certain that no one's eyes are damaged by those chemicals, in order that you don't splat people, they rub their eyes, something runs into their eyes are itchy, and without thinking, they'll rub their eyes. You see people doing all of this all the time, which is really, forget about salt, they get all kinds of bacteria into their eye, end up with infections and so on. Don't do that. So wash your hands before rubbing your eyes. So here where there's a good chance that you've got some, or a small chance actually, but there's a chance that you have some chemicals that are bad to your eyes, that is the reason that it's so critical. Omer Abaye, look, it's not very concentrated. Umishtakach ki kurta bechura. You take a full quart of salt, regular kind of salt, and that would be a quart is 30 sa, which is a very nice size of salt, you'll find actually one drop, one grain of salt in all of that. And that would be essentially the kind of proportion, the concentration that Chazal felt you needed to be careful about, which is amazing. So that in order to avoid any type of harm, even on that level, you see that we made the whole halacha of mayim acharonim. So what about if you didn't eat? What about if you just measured salt? You were pouring salt from a bag into your salt shaker. Would you also have to wash mayim acharonim? Or is this just a din in actual eating? Omar Lai, what kind of question is that? Of course you would. Why would you not? Lomi boy. I mean, the point is exposure to these kind of salts. It's true that mostly people will come to salt at a table, but if you're involved with salt in any other way, why would you not have to wash your hands? Of course you do. So now Abaye tells us a lot of things that he used to believe that were simple, and it turns out they're actually much different than what he thought. We have a lot of things that Abaye said like that. Omar Abaye, I used to think, Mireish Hava Amina, the reason that we never wash Mayim Aharonim on the ground is because of Zuama, because of the fact that the water has absorbed, if it's taking the filth off your hand, so then it's going to end up breeding bacteria. That's what I thought. Little did I know. Omar Limar, but Rabba told me, no. It's because there's a ruach ra'ah that is shora on it if it's on the ground, and therefore it can cause damage to people that are exposed to this mean ruach ra'ah, which could only do you harm. And there was another thing I always used to think, that hay de lo shokel midi mi petura ki nakit inish kasel amishte, I must say, naively believe that the reason that you're not supposed to take anything off of a table when one of the people on the table is drinking is because the guy may choke seeing you, hey, what are you taking off the dessert for? And that's the end of him, you know? So you don't want to be gerim any takola on the sukkah. That's what I thought, because he might choke. But then Rabbi told me, no, that's not why. It's because that's the kind of thing that causes ruach tzrada. Ruach tzrada is generally understood as migraines. So if you have a tendency towards migraines, make sure nobody takes anything off of the table. If anything's going to get you a headache, it's that kind of stuff. V'lo amran el d'shaka v'lo mahada. That's only if he's taking stuff off to actually remove it from the table. Not if he's just like taking something off for a moment and clearly is going to put it back. Avol mishka vadure, that is not a problem. Less than that. Furthermore, it's only if you're taking it away more than 4 amas from the table. But if it's within 4 amas, there's no problem. And it's only if you're taking away something that is needed for part of the su'uda. If it's not something that has anything to do with the su'uda, then it doesn't cause migraines. And Marbar Rav Ashi was very makbid on this. And he was makbid even on a pepper grinder, a little pepper grinder that was on the table. And if somebody would take it off, he held that is also considered a midi d'tzricha l'su'udata. That's something that is needed for the meal. And if you take it off, you're going to give all your guests migraines. V'yom Rabbayim, another thing I used to believe naively, I actually thought that the reason we sweep the floor under the table is because we like to be clean. That's what I thought. So, hi, de kanshe nashvara. Why do we get the breadcrumbs? We bring them into a different spot, take them away from under the table. I used to think it was just because we like to be clean. But it turns out that Rabba tells me, there's more to it than that, my son. Omar Limar, Mishum de Kashila Niyuta. It's because we read, remember we learned in Psachim, we had the din of we had the Agadata about the two Sarim that are in charge of either Parnasa Teva or of Aniyut. So, I mean, the Pashtas, okay, that doesn't matter. But so we said that the name of the Sar of Aniyut that is the one in charge of poverty in the world, is called Mr. Filthy. So you don't want to get into Mr. Filth's hands, because the end result will be you're going to get poor. And that's what Rabbi explained to me. It's Bishum Takashi Lani Yuta. Leaving crumbs on the floor can cause you to lose your parnosa. There was this guy, Ahu Gavra, Davi Mahadar Ale Sarada Niyuta, Alohavi Yocholai. And there was a person that the Tsar, this Malach in charge of Aniyut, was trying to get him. And he wanted this guy to lose his money. But he never was able to get at him. Because Zohar on Ashvara Tuva, he was very makpid never to leave crumbs on the floor. So one day, this guy goes out and he has a picnic. Aha! So Yumachad Korach Rifta Yavle, there he is making a picnic over the grass. So this Tsar of Aniusa says to himself, aha, now I've got him. Hashta Vada enough up your day. Now he's going to fall into my hands. There's no way he's going to be able to pick up all of those crumbs hiding between the blades of grass. He's mine. Anyway, Basar D'Achel, after this guy finishes his picnic, what does he do? He takes out his portable shovel, digs up the entire area, and throws it together with the grass and the crumbs into the stream that was running nearby, Shadina Lenahara, and then he hears this voice behind him saying, damn, that guy threw me out of my home. So finally, Afke Hu Gavra Mi Beite. It looks like I'm never going to have a comfortable place to live around this man. V'amar Abaye, another thing I used to think, which was very naive as it turns out, I used to think that the reason that people don't drink foam at the top of whatever, their beer or whatever, I used to think, that it's because it's misuta, you know, they want to drink, they don't want to get this foam all over their face. But Rabbi said to me, that's not why. It's bishum dekashi lecharsam. The very thing that foam does is it gives you allergies. Weren't you wondering why there's this immense breakout of allergies lately? That's because people are drinking foam. And that's the real reason. And actually, if you drink it, then you get allergies. So you'll think, okay, so I'll blow it off. Oh, no. If you blow it off, that gives you chronic headaches. Oh, heck. So then I'll push it off. Oh, no. If you push it off, it makes you poor. So what do? You learn patience, my friend. L'shakei shekui. Let the foam go down naturally. And then everything will be fine. If you let it go back into the beer, then nothing bad will happen to you. So, what happens if somebody made the mistake and he drank foam? Is there any way to cure those allergies? Well, if you're suffering from an allergy because you drank the foam of a cup of wine, the solution to that is have some beer. But what happens if you drink the beer, the foam that's on the beer? What do you do then? Then you drink Maya. So having water, that cures the beer. Well, what about if you drink the foam that went onto the top of a cup of water? There's nothing to do. No antidote for water foam. And that's why people say the poor always get poorer. If you were stuck with the water at the beginning, there's nothing to do. You could also be stuck with your allergies. Bater ania, azla aniyuta. Anyway, another thing I used to think, says Abaya, when I was naive, mireish ave amina, haidelo achla yarka, mikisha da asa ginoa. This is a general thing that people are very marked on. They don't take a vegetable out of that little bundle that the gardener himself ties. So, you know, when they got the veggies that are tied up like a thing of carrots, well, they don't just take it directly out of that. And instead, they untie it, put it nicely in a plate or whatever. I thought the reason for that was because it looks like you're a guy that can't control his appetite. You're so hungry, you're going to rip it right out of the bag. It's Mishum de Mirsekir Aftanuta. But Rabbi said to me, that's not the reason. The reason is because it makes you vulnerable to Kishuf. And I'll tell you even a story where you can see that. Rav Chisda and Rabbah Bar Rav Huna, they were traveling along in their little boat, and this woman, and you know those Ahimatrinusa, those are dangerous women, man, these society people. So anyway, she says to them, "I'd like a little ride in your boat." And they refused to let her in. And of course, as being a Matrinusa, she knew all of that Kishuv stuff. So she waved her nasty witch's fingers that were all disguised as this beautiful princess, but we know what she was really, wart-faced kind of witch. And she says her magical incantation, and the boat can't move. Ha! So now she thinks, I gotcha. So Amra Milta, she says this magic spell, Asarta la Araba. But then they said something that undid the spell. And Sharyua, they got the boat out. So she said, nothing to do with you guys. My Aved Lefer. Now, Lemaisa, that wasn't the reason. Because she didn't know that they had set a counterspell and that they also had graduated from Hogwarts. She thought that the reason that she wasn't able to spell them was because, what can I do to people like you? You don't use broken pottery after the bathroom. You never will squish a louse on clothing. And you never eat a vegetable that you pull out of a gardener's bagging. So that's when they found out that, oh, how do you like that? That itself makes you vulnerable for Kishuv. Another thing that naive Abaya thinks about himself, you know what I used to think, can you imagine? I used to actually believe, sounds crazy now, doesn't it, that the reason that you don't eat a veggie that falls to the floor off your table is because it's dirty. Silly me. That's not what it's about at all. I thought it was Mishum Miyasuta. But as Rob explained to me, there's more important hidden issue. It's because it causes halitosis. And therefore, if you'll eat it and pick it up off of the floor, you got bad breath. And another thing I used to think, silly me, Mi'omer Abaye, would you believe that I actually used to believe that Mireish Avamina, the reason it's not a good idea to sit under a drain pipe that's coming off of the roof is because you never know what might be pouring off of that drain pipe since people do their laundry and God knows what else up on the roof. You don't want to be sitting under that drain pipe. That's what I used to think. It's mishum shofchim. It's because it's sewer. But then Rabbah said, no, that's not why. The reason you don't want to sit under a drain pipe is because that's a place where shadim like to hang out. And actually, there was a maisa of Hanashakulai. There were these sabalim, the havadara chavita de chamra. They were carrying this heavy barrel of wine. Boyleit puchin wanted to rest for a minute. So they put the barrel of wine down underneath a drain pipe. Little did they know that there was a shade right there, and the barrel burst open and they lost all of the wine. So these guys were extremely upset about that, and they sued the shade. Now, it's not all that easy to sue shade him, but they went to Mar Bar Rav Ashi. And Mar Bar Rav Ashi, he knew how to get those shade him into court. And so Afik Shipure Shamte, he takes out the shofarot in the Bezdin and he puts them into Cherem. If you don't come, then you're going to be in Nidui. Well, no shade wants to be in Nidui, so they show up to court. So Otolakame walks, the shade walks in, and Mar Bar Rav Ashi says, what kind of business is this, breaking people's barrels of wine? Amar Tavid Achi. So the shade says to him, well, what am I supposed to do? The idiot laid down that barrel right in my ear. I was fast asleep. What would you do if you wake up with a barrel of wine in your ear? I'll bet you would get angry. So what do you expect? They stuck it in my ear. or Marley. So Marlboro Bashi says to him, "Excuse me, sir, you are not supposed to be in places that humans use for setting things down. At Peduchta the Shriche Rabbi Maibayita, what were you doing there? This is a public street, and you're sitting around taking out your little pipe and making a little schnooze, and now everybody's supposed to know that invisible shadim are in the way? You are the one who was Mishana in Rishus HaRabim, and you're chayev to pay. Atu the Shanit, go pay." "Oh my gosh," said the shade, "good heavens, this is not so simple. So, okay, if you're going to paskin that I have to pay, so then, you know, usually you're given 30 days to pay. So, likvali mar zimna vefra. So, Rebbe should give me a time to pay, and I'll pay." Anyway, came the day that it was time to pay, kavale zimna. And the guy didn't show up in the morning. I shouldn't say the guy. The shade didn't show up in the morning, and only came later in the day. So, when he showed up, finally, Kiata, so Mar Baravashi says to him, "What kind of business is this? Why didn't you show up on time? You had a 12 p.m. court appointment." So he said, "Well, I, there's no way I could come up with the money. Because kol mili ditzayir v'chotin v'chayil umani, let lan reshuta l'mishko mine. Anything which the bracha is not shayra on," right? So anything that is counted, measured, packed, all those things are what they are. They're a specific amount. And once someone owns a specific amount, it's his. I can't take that. I'm going to take money. Where am I going to get money? Who's going to hire a shade? Did you never hear about the Me Too column that we've got about the type of prejudice against shadim there is today? It's outrageous. If you want to get shadim to pay, then you should join the movement for give a shade a job. But anyway, so I've got to pick up all of this stuff. I can't take stuff that's owned by other people. Then I'll get another suit on my head. Forget it. What I can take is the stuff that is going to have a brocha, that shayra in it, because that's just random increase, right? So, as we said, you know, baruch hanota and bracha b'kri hazo, okay, that I can take, but I got to go around to find something like that. And it took me a couple of extra hours. So I had to find something that was allowed for me to take. Anyway, another thing that I used to be very naive about, says Abaye, I used to think that the reason that people pour a little bit of water out from a pitcher before they pour it into their cup is because there's always a little bit of pollution on the top, and it would probably have tzifta. You know, since they used water filters, they didn't have Brita filters. They used to use wood chip filters, and wood chip filters leave little tiny pieces of wood, or you don't want to be drinking that. So they pour it off. Silly me. Omar Limar, that's not why. It's because there's always a little chance of Mayim HaRoyim that the Shadim drank from, and that would make it very dangerous to drink from that pitcher. And it's been actually proven that Brita filters do not filter out Mayim HaRoyim that Shadim have drunk from. And so because of that, people will just first pour it out, and that gets rid of the Mayim HaRoyim, and then you can drink. And it was actually a maaser like this because Rav Papa, he was very much a part of give a shade a job, and he used to hire shadim to hire. They would help out in the house. And anyway, so he sent this shade to go bring some water. And Ozolatayim Mayim in Ahara, so he went down to the riverbanks to get some water. And he came back late. Yaakov. So Kiata, when he finally shows up, everybody, what happened to you today? Amaya Kafta, what took you so long to bring the water back? He said, well, you know, all the water that was going by, I had rachmonas on the people. You gave me a good job. I didn't want to take any of the Mayim HaRoyim, and it's easy for a shade to pick out Mayim HaRoyim. And so I waited ad hachalfi Mayim HaRoyim. Anyway, while this conversation is going on, the people at the table take the pitcher of the water that he brought and they pour a little bit out first before using it. So he says, oh my gosh, if I had known that you guys were bright enough to do that, then I wouldn't have been late, because I would have known that even if there's Mayim HaRoyim, You guys know the sure cure for my Amaraim. Pour a little out, and I wouldn't have been late. Ki Aser Rav Dimi, Amar, you know, I think we should stop, huh? Yeah. Okay. All right. So, an exciting day. I'm sure Ori enjoyed all of his stories. Hopefully, she won't have any kind of nightmares. You know, you made the Shadim probably smiling Shadim for her. So, we're okay. Richie, you got to watch out. You know, you never know what's hiding under the bed. But
Rebbe, I love quoting Rebbe's grandfather.
You're muted.
Rebbe, what time is the Rosh Chodesh Elul here?
It's already in your mailbox. Actually, in another 10 minutes, it'll be in your mailbox.
Rebbe, it's not even, it's not Memorex. You know it's not live. That's from the question.
What do you mean? It's even better than live.
Rebbe.
It's like good aged wine. You can even ask Moshe Handel the kind of absolutely tar wine that he served last night. That's aged wine. Sir Richard, anyway, watch out. And don't put your toesies down under that bed. You never know
what. I'll tell you, they're shading all over the place.
They really are. I think they're taking up more and more.
There's a lot more
jobs.
Baruch Hashem, I'm back in the Holy Land where I don't have to worry about it.
Baruch Hashem. What was the quote that you wanted to give to Barnea?
I don't remember if he called it the altar. I don't remember what it said, but he said this a number of times. He said, so why didn't he do like his father? Why only 12 hours? Why didn't he do like his father? So he set a rule that on a Midas Chassidus, you can't do a Midas Chassidus unless you're holding in that Madrega.
Yeah, of course. Very good. Good thing to know for all of the Chassidim.
Yeah. That's actually what I wanted to share. I wanted to suggest that Chala Bar Chamra is because Chamra has a shelf life. And that a Midas Chassidus like that is something which has to be an expression of the person. You can't just pass it on to a new generation. It goes bad.
Very good. Definitely true. Okay, Kol Tov everyone. Chodesh Tov Mevorach. And looking forward for more exciting sugyas to come.